This is If I Fire You, written by Chawupa and read by Flower Parish. This is a Danny Phantom and Batman crossover fic, rated for teen and up audiences, featuring the relationship Tim Drake / Danny Fenton.
Your heart is what it is. You stood in the hallway staring.
Danny prides himself on being the one barista at the Starbucks in the Wayne Enterprises lobby that doesn't get weird about serving high-level personnel. That isn't to say all the others are super weird. They just are intimidated by people who could literally ruin their lives at the drop of a hat. Danny is just built different. It's hard to be intimidated by old, bald, mediocre white men with lots of money when you face off against the tyrant king of the dimension that holds all the dimensions together, and win, at age 15. Not to mention the whole, spent a year in a lab as a rat without all the legal protections that lab animals have, thing. Once you watch your heart get pulled from your open chest cavity for a third time, a lot of things you used to be scared of just stop being scary. In any case, his thick skin and unflappable spirit, have made him a favorite among the other regular baristas when someone starts getting uppity, but it does have the unfortunate side effect of making his managers unhappy with him when he doesn't show the correct amount of respect to the yelling children. He is on thin ice after the last time he stared down a board member until they stopped yelling at him. It doesn't matter that Ms. Fox, CEO Tim Drake Wayne's personal assistant, likes him and stood up for him during the incident last time. He is supposed to be on his best behavior. All this to say, Danny has very, very few fucks to give for the people who run the company that his lowly Starbucks job is placed in. There are a combination of factors that lead to Danny's quote-unquote breakdown on this current customer, and Danny takes half a second while he waits stone-faced for a break in the man's rant to list them for posterity's and his sanity's sake. 1. This particular, red-faced, spitting-mad customer is not one Danny recognizes. 2. Miss Fox told him 2 days ago that she is moving jobs so he won't see her nearly as often anymore. Danny considers Tam a pretty good friend. They even text each other memes now. 3. Danny wasn't able to sleep last night. The combination of insomnia, ADHD, and PTSD made it literally impossible. 4. Danny has weathered 4 of these people already and has only been here for an hour. 5. Every one of the angry people so far have been interview candidates for Tam's job, including the man in front of him. 6. Danny is just so fucking tired. He does not have the patience for this today. The man finally stops for a breath, and Danny takes that as his cue. When Sir screams a lot, opens his mouth to keep going, Danny holds up a hand to stop him. One of his coworkers mutters, "Danny just snapped." The other snorts. Both of them have paused their drink-making to watch as Danny finally lets himself say what he has wanted to every time he has been yelled at. "So what I'm hearing," Danny makes sure his voice is dripping with disdain as he starts up. He needs this man to know exactly how fucking stupid Danny thinks his temper tantrum is that you want me, literally the lowest person on the Starbucks corporate ladder, to personally lose my job because we don't carry the specific brand of soy milk that you prefer anymore. Tam and Mr. Drake Wayne make an appearance at the entry to the cafe, and Danny grins internally. He knows that Tam will enjoy the show at least, and maybe if he makes a good enough impression, he can get Mr. Drake Wayne's phone number to ask him on a date. Tim is fucking pretty. Sue him. He's already about to lose his shitty minimum wage job. He might as well shoot his shot while he still has the chance. Danny keeps his eyes firmly locked on the man in front of him. Time to put his hard-earned psychological evaluation skills to use. He has never been more glad for Jazz's special interest in psychology and insistence that he keep up with therapy. Mr. Inferiority Complex tries to open his mouth to start again, but Danny doesn't allow him the chance. Nah, it's your turn to listen, big guy. You aren't actually mad about any of this. You are, at most, a little annoyed by the change in product, but ultimately give less of a fuck about that than I do about your temper tantrum. Danny's tone remains even as Mr. Entitled's face gets more and more red. No, what you're actually mad about is that you were dismissed from your interview to be an executive assistant for Mr. Drake Wayne an impressive 20 minutes early because you think you could do the job of CEO better than him and acted like it. Someone in the cafe snorts in amusement. Danny's pretty sure they're a janitor. You think your real diploma, bachelor's in business management, and generational wealth make you inherently better than people like Mr. Drake Wayne and I, who dropped out of high school and haven't publicly pursued any higher education. You think that people like him should be here in my shoes, where you don't have to pretend to think of them as actual humans, deserving of basic courtesy and respect. So, when he called you out on your frankly archaic biases and dismissed you from being eligible for the position 10 minutes into your allotted time with him, which you were already insulted by because the meeting was based on his schedule instead of yours, it made you uncomfortable. You don't like that someone so young and seemingly uneducated is better than you because it doesn't fit your narrow little worldview where the only people worth calling people are the ones who grew up with silver spoons in their mouths. Danny dips into faux sympathy as he continues. You can't just say that to him, though, can you? Because regardless of how bitter and jealous you are that he is in that spot instead of you, you recognize that he has all the power here. Poor little you just has to deal with it, and that makes you feel small, doesn't it? He drops the fake sympathy. It made you feel small and wrong and out of control, and you don't like that. So you decided that you would go and do what always makes you feel better when someone you consider lesser comes out on top of you. Danny pauses for dramatic effect, but doesn't allow him to take the conversation back. You found the nearest little guy that you could scream at without consequences, and proceeded to throw the exact kind of temper tantrum you can't throw in front of Mr. Drake Wayne. Danny is pretty sure Tam is holding back from cheering him on. He swallows the grin that threatens to appear because of it, and finally takes his eyes off the asshole, only to pretend to inspect his nails, letting boredom suffuse the air around him as he keeps going. Unluckily for you, I don't need a degree, or a diploma, or GED even, to be able to tell that all this screaming is a result of a superiority complex used to mask the fact that you know, in the back of your head, deep down in the bottom of your heart, how insignificant you are. Is that a hint of awe in Tim's eyes? Danny fights another grin down when Tam looks at Tim, and a kind of menacing glee makes its way into her expression. You have to pretend things like age and official education and wealth make you better than you are, because otherwise you would have to face the reality of your own abilities. Danny flicks his hand out to look at his nails from a different perspective before side-eyeing Mr. Overcompensating. If those things don't define someone's worth, then what does? Actual intelligence? Compassion? Hard work? If what matters is what a person says and does instead of how they're born or who they know, then you're mediocre at best. And if you're mediocre, then what makes you different from the people you consider below you? The cafe is silent as Danny finally looks back up at the man directly and grins, all false cheer and fake friendliness. It's okay, though. You can keep yelling at me if you want. He takes particular pride in how chipper he manages to make himself sound. Like he's addressing a toddler instead of a grown man. Sometimes our feelings are just too big to fit inside our bodies, and we need to let them out, but we don't always have the tools to do that in a healthy way. Maybe after you feel better, you can look into some better coping skills. Tim may or may not have just fallen in love. Tam, I want him to be my PA. He turns to Tam, whose face promises merciless teasing. Tam just laughs at him. So listen, Danny knew going into this PA job that it was a bad idea to work directly under Tim Drake Wayne. He knows himself, and unfortunately, that means he knows his type, which Tim was practically tailor-made for. It's like whatever ghost is in charge of the cycle of reincarnation sat down with clockwork to pick out the perfect soul and genetic donors for his future king to fall in love with. He knows for a fact that didn't happen. Clockwork is too much a smug bastard to not have poked the two of them into each other's lives yet, if that was the case. And yet. And yet, his boss of almost 2 years is Tim Drake Wayne, and every second he spends with the man has him falling harder. Sam laughs at him whenever he calls to complain. Tucker tells him that it's his own fault for taking the job offer. Val, at least, is a little sympathetic, since she did the same thing with Sam for a while, albeit the place they worked was a fucking plant nursery and not, you know, the number one top-performing company in the world. Plus, it was employee to floor manager, not PA to CEO. Semantics. The obvious solution would be to quit and ask if Tim were willing to take him out on a date, but Danny can't quit because this poor man literally only sleeps because Danny schedules in his fucking sleep hours. There is also the mutual vigilante identity thing, even though Danny is retired except for emergencies. Fuck, but that revelation had only made Tim more attractive. The man had stopped pretending around him. It wasn't like he had done much to hide his interests and intelligence from Danny before the reveal, of course. He is the single most competent CEO of any company Danny has ever met, and at this point, Danny has met many. Now, though, Tim talks to him about the aspects of his interests and life that matter the most to him. The best part, of all the things he has gotten over the last 2 years being Tim's PA, was the repeal of the Ecto Control Acts and getting to know the other bats. He loves Tim so much. Tim is his best friend. Sam and Tucker will always be his siblings, but there is something different about how much he likes Tim. Hell, Danny would go so far as to say Tim is the best thing to ever happen to him. Because of Tim, he now gets to spar with Red Hood regularly. The Red Hood, Danny's absolute favorite hero. Danny didn't realize how much he missed sparring with other ghost and ghost-adjacent beings until that first time in the gym with Hood. Danny has never had a big brother. He kind of didn't have a big sister either. He had a mom and a Jack and Maddie. Which, turns out Tim was also neglected as a kid, and that neglect kickstarted his vigilante career. Danny laughed himself silly when he found out. He feels confident when he says that Jason is his older brother. He thinks meeting Jason is the second best thing to happen in his life. The first, as stated before, is Tim Drake. Jason, once he took the poor guy, and honestly half the Waynes as well afterwards, to frostbite for decontamination and ectostarvation, had made leaps and bounds in his mental and physical health. Tim had been weird about it for 2 weeks, before he had confessed their blood history to Danny, and how he didn't blame him and wasn't scared of him, but was upset that he seemed to just want to forget it. Danny had promptly beat the shit out of Jason, in a ghost brotherly way, on the sparring mat, until he was ready to apologize to Tim and talk about his feelings like an adult. Tim had been beaming for weeks after, and the three of them are actually probably the closest out of all the bats now. Anytime Jason needs to prepare for an emotional conversation, once a week before his therapy appointment at minimum, they go to one of his gyms and beat the shit out of each other. Sometimes Damien joins in, but Tim is still kind of skittish around the kid, so usually Danny splits off with him and lets Jason and Tim do their own thing, while Danny lets Damien try, and fail, to maim him. Bruce has actually thanked Danny a couple of times for helping with Damien. Semi-regular chances to go fully feral on someone he can't actually hurt, thank you ghost powers and being Ghost King, made Danny an ideal target, especially after the first, and only, time Danny used more than his intangibility to fight, and had handed Damien his ass in seconds flat, multiple times in a row. Damien hadn't accepted defeat until Danny beat him without any powers. That match lasted 2 minutes. The kid was good, don't get him wrong, but Danny learned to brawl on the street first and foremost. Much like Jason, Danny fought quick and dirty. He knew the techniques and how to counter them, but where the kid was formally trained against other formally trained people, though his time as Robin definitely helped, he doesn't know how to counter for the kind of feral Danny brings to the table. He's getting off topic. Tim Drake Wayne. Tim Drake Wayne and his pretty fucking face have been in Danny's company for 3 days straight now, and Danny is dying again. The good news is that Bruce finally gave Tim permission to add Danny to the civilian elevator for the penthouse, so he and Tim have been able to spread out in comfortable clothes in the living room, and Danny can use his flight to think better when he needs to. Sometimes rereading things upside down on the ceiling helps. The bad news, Danny is so very tired and so very gay, and almost lost it at the end of day two when he'd returned from a coffee run to find Tim curled up on his side with his laptop in front of him after a shower, no shoes, oversized sweatshirt, damp hair curling slightly at the ends, and wearing Danny's extra pair of sweats instead of his own. They are a similar size in waistbands, but Danny is several inches taller than Tim. The rolled ankles at the bottom made it clear that Tim had to know he had grabbed the wrong pair. He can't not know. Danny thinks they might be playing chicken at this point, though, because they are 65 hours into this and Tim is now shirtless in Danny's sweats and has let them casually start to slide further down his hips the longer this goes on, and Danny, never one to back down from a challenge, is in one of Tim's ripped-up band t-shirts tied up at the bottom like a crop top and a pair of Tim's running shorts. Danny has spent the last hour watching Tim pace with a manic look in his eyes and letting Danny's sweats drop lower and lower. He has a headphone in one ear and a text-to-speech program reading the latest financials to him for the fifth time since they realized almost 3 days ago that someone on the board has been moving money from their employee disaster relief fund. They can't find them, though. Whichever bastard it is, they are good. Danny has been poring over the relief fund applications from the past year, trying to figure out whose requests were legitimate, and there isn't an obvious pattern to the who and why. No one repeats too often, the person was always in the area for the need to be provable, and none of them have been so affected that they actually need to ask for anything. Until 3 days ago, when someone was caught in a second rogue attack in as many weeks and had been further injured in the second one, to the point of needing the extra money to help cover their medical expenses. When he had received the denial, he'd hauled his injured, panicking ass directly to HR, and the supervisor had brought it up in front of Danny, who had immediately had a feeling that it was bigger than one person. Sure enough, upon an official email to everyone who had applied in the last month, about half of them responded with confusion, saying they hadn't applied. Danny is upside down again, hands on the floor like he's doing a handstand with his legs folded like a pretzel, and using his telekinesis to flip rapidly through the possibly affected people again when he stops dead, on a PA for one of the department heads. He isn't sure what it is about this particular application that stops him, but he isn't going to ignore his gut. At this point in life, he knows better. He grabs the paper and rotates right side up to grab his WE laptop, fingers flying as he accesses their profile. Tim whips around at the sound of keys on Danny's laptop clacking. You got something? A low, warning hum emanates from Danny's chest, accompanied by a wave of patience, maybe patience. Tim quiets immediately and stalks around the couch to plop to the ground right behind Danny so he can look over his shoulder. Danny adjusts his posture immediately to accommodate Tim as he scoots in closer, sliding his legs out on either side of Danny's hips so he can rest his head on Danny's shoulder. Thankfully, Danny is getting somewhere finally, and his brain is moving too fast for the contact to elicit the shiver it usually does. He and Tim are very professional when in the office and on the clock, but they are best friends before they are coworkers at this point. Plus, the both of them are chronically touch-starved. It is rare to see the two of them hanging out outside of work hours without casually cuddling. Tim does it with his young justice friends, too, and Danny was welcomed into those cuddle piles with open arms as well. Here! Danny stops suddenly on a meeting from a little under a year ago, and Tim jumps at the sudden shout. The PA for the head of PR met with Wilson right before they submitted their application. 2 weeks later, the both of them were on vacation for a week and had another meeting right after they got back. Since then, they've met once a week. I tried to schedule a meeting with Wilson a few weeks ago during the time slot he usually meets with them because it was open on the calendar his PA gave me, and he called personally to tell me he couldn't make that time slot because of a different weekly meeting he has then. I didn't bother checking for the truth of it at the time because there were 100 reasons his poor PA might not have known about the meeting. Remind me to send Alice another fruit basket next month. God knows the woman deserves it for putting up with him. Tim has his head back on Danny's shoulder, but is decidedly closer to his back this time, and with his head tilted just slightly closer to his. Danny does his best to not sink into the warmth. I can schedule the delivery tomorrow. Danny waves his hand. But I checked just now, and that time slot is always blank, ever since the first meeting before they took vacation. Same for the other PA, but not their department head. Their department head always has a solo meeting at that time. Circumstantial at best, but Wilson has access to all employee records and PR Head's PA would know about every person affected by the disasters and how badly they were affected, Tim says, voice low. Danny does have to suppress a shiver at that, as Tim wraps his arms around Danny's waist to reach for his laptop so he can scroll through the calendars and records Danny found. Yeah. Danny is surprised his voice is so steady. He is never more glad that he doesn't have a cock than moments like this. "Danny, this is incredible," Tim says, as he follows the same thread Danny did. "How did you connect them, if the only meeting on the books is the one from that long ago?" Danny suppresses another shiver at the compliment. "I had lunch with Alice about a week ago, and she was complaining about his partner, only gave me a nickname and said they got together almost a year ago. The other PA's name pinged in my memory with the nickname, but I wasn't sure it would be anything, since Alice said the new beau had a visitor pass and Drew isn't normally a nickname associated with Alexandria. It was a bit of a stretch until I remembered that HR sent an email to the rest of the executive PAs about their updated pronouns a little over a year ago, right before Drew started complaining about how common the gender-neutral nicknames for Alexandria are, but they didn't want to change their full name, since they're gender-fluid. I'm not really friendly with them, too daddy's money for me to tolerate for longer than 10 minutes every couple of days, so I never heard the official pick." Danny pushes Tim's hands away from the computer and pulls up the last 2 months of security footage for the cameras pointed at Wilson's door and starts putting it in an automatic splicing program so they don't have to sift through all of it. Tim's hands fall to wrap around Danny's middle as he works, and his breathing starts to slow into something almost peaceful. Danny starts on a small program to pull and sort the dates and times that each known fraudulent application was submitted and how long between submission and approval quietly. Tim hasn't slept a wink in the last 3 days. Danny, at least, has grabbed 3 or so hours here and there. He hasn't had more than 12 hours of it in the last 66 hours now that he checks the clock again, and none of it has been in the last 18 hours, so Danny is absolutely losing his mind. Tim, though, at least Danny has enough ghost in him to sort of beat the insomnia back sometimes. The best weapon against Tim's insomnia that the bats have found so far is someone laying on him until he falls asleep. Danny casts a cautious glance out of the corner of his eyes, careful not to turn his head to disrupt where Tim's is resting against the side of his. He looks peaceful, like Danny finding a connection that wasn't an immediate dead end, finally let his brain succumb to sleep. Danny resists the urge to reach up and stroke his thumb across Tim's forehead. He looks unburdened for once, and Danny's heart flutters in his chest. He wishes, suddenly and fiercely, that he could press a soft kiss to his forehead and watch those constant worry lines smooth over while awake. Danny forces his eyes back to the computer where he was halfway through a line of code. "Get it together, Danny." He tries to focus on the code, but there is a warmth spreading from every point of contact with Tim that settles into his bones, with a soft, bubbling happiness that demands his attention. "Oh my God, I'm going to start purring." There is a strange kind of clarity that usually accompanies 3 a.m. whispers in the dark at a middle or high school slumber party. That time of night when you and all your friends are tangled up in the sheets and each other, lights out was hours ago, but you're still giggling, whispering secrets that you would never allow in the light of day. Danny hasn't gotten that since he was 13, sometime before he died probably. Afterwards, 3 a.m. was reserved for homework, sometimes, the occasional ghost fight, often, and first aid, pretty much every night. Sitting in Tim's living room with his bare chest pressed to Danny's back and his legs splayed out on either side of him, his head resting on Danny's shoulder, and his arms around Danny's waist, Danny feels that same clarity hit him like sunlight. Danny closes his eyes, feels Tim's even breathing against his back, and the slow warmth that seeps into his bones from every spot where they touch, and he knows. He takes a deep breath and feels his core start purring as he exhales. "I'm in love with him," Danny thinks, as he opens his eyes back up and lifts them up to stare at the ceiling without moving his head and dislodging Tim. There is a burning at the corners of his eyes that usually means he's going to cry, but his purring doesn't stop. "I am in love with him." It comes with a feeling like relief. A giddy, happy feeling as he finally acknowledges something that he has been avoiding since they shared nightlives. He closes his eyes and lets himself melt a little into the sturdy warmth of Tim. Tim isn't asleep, per se, as he watches Danny work on a program to sort through the data they have for the known fake applications. He can't quite tell what data it's pulling in, but he isn't trying very hard. They have a lead that isn't immediately terrible, and they both have appointments tomorrow, probably today at this point, so Tim lets himself hold on to Danny and drift as much as his mind will allow. Danny is cool in his arms and against his body as Tim's breathing steadies out to something mimicking sleep. Part of his brain, the part that shuts off around hour 48 without sleep, stirs to whisper, once again, how bad of an idea this whole cuddling thing is. Tim is Danny's direct boss. It's the same thing that kept him from trying a relationship with Tam. He will not date someone working directly below him. He wouldn't mind if Danny worked most other jobs at WE. The power imbalance would still be there, but HR has forms for that to protect Danny from retaliation should anything go wrong. The forms still work for the two of them technically, but Tim isn't comfortable with the idea of dating his PA. Fuck, does he want to date Danny, though? Tim doesn't want to risk their friendship for it, though. He likes Danny, and if that means he has to ignore the part of him, most of him, that wants to curl up in bed with him every night and wake up to his sleepy smile and morning breath every day, he would rather have as much as Danny is willing to give him than none at all. So, it's beyond a bad idea to hold Danny like this, to let himself feel safe with the other man in his arms. It's a bad idea every time they curl up on the couch during the weekend to watch a movie. It's a bad idea every time they have wine night and end up tipsy and giggling at ridiculous reality TV or gossip rags. It's a bad idea every game night with Bart, Cassie, and Con when all five of them end up in a pile of blankets and tangled limbs. It is always a bad idea. He doesn't move. Danny melts back against him a little more, pauses in his work, and Tim almost asks what's wrong before a soft purr starts up. Tim has heard Danny's purr twice in the 2 years they've known each other. When he asked, Danny had freely admitted that purring wasn't something he did often at all. Most ghosts tend to do it all the time around friends and Freyd alike. Much like cats, it means the ghost is content, that they feel safe and happy. The act itself is instinctual, but the frequency with which it happens is learned. Danny didn't even know he could purr until Frostbite Ghost adopted him 2 years into being a Haffa, and then the GIW had gotten a hold of him. Danny doesn't purr unless he feels completely safe, cares deeply about the person he is with, is incredibly tired, and is somewhere he considers home. If even one factor is missing, he just won't purr. The two times Tim has heard him purr were both in different places physically, but surrounded by his Freyd. Tim can feel the rumble of Danny's purr vibrate against his rib cage and feels affection bubbling up in his chest to match. Danny feels at home with him. Maybe, Tim thinks, it wouldn't ruin anything. If I fire you, can we date? Is out of Tim's mouth before he can properly process the thought. Danny freezes for a moment, his purr stuttering in his chest as Tim's face heats up. He groans and buries his face in Danny's shoulder. Oh my god, that was a terrible way to phrase that, I'm so sorry. Danny's purr picks up again as he shifts in Tim's arms and starts laughing. Tim groans again, feels a smile fighting to appear as he holds Danny in place. He is trying to turn to look at Tim, who is very much not about to let him see how red his face is. Danny isn't fighting very hard, though, still laughing. His purring hasn't slowed in the slightest. I've been thinking about going to college recently, Danny says as he gives up on moving and leans back into Tim again. Mechanics, engineering, astronomy, ooh, maybe astrophysics. Tim stops fighting his smile, face still pressed to Danny's neck. Only if you really want to. Danny's laugh is everything Tim has ever wanted. My resignation will be on your desk in 12 hours, he says. It's college application season anyway. Tim finally pulls back enough to allow Danny to turn and look at him. He is sure the grin on his face has to be the goofiest, sappiest expression he has ever worn, but he doesn't particularly care. Can I kiss you before then? Danny's freckles are glowing and the soft smile on his face could outshine the sun, as far as Tim is concerned. He reaches to take Tim's face in his hands and leans in to rest their foreheads together. Tim doesn't ever want to look away from Danny's face. He feels invincible here, the air warm between them with only a few inches separating their lips. They stay like that for a solid 30 seconds before Danny leans in to close the last few inches. This okay? He breathes out against Tim's lips, eyes closed. Tim doesn't answer, just presses his lips against Danny's. Tim has kissed a lot of people a lot of times. He is free with physical affection when he feels comfortable with someone. Dinah says it probably stems from him not getting enough affection as a kid, and Tim can kind of agree. He is greedy for affection once he allows himself to seek it out from someone. He is extremely picky about who he seeks it out from, but he loves it and doesn't let go unless the other person asks him to. Kissing is part of that. Forehead and hair and cheek and hand and even normal kisses. He is an expert at this point. When he kisses Danny, he feels like it rewrites his understanding of the act. Tim pulls away just enough to breathe, lets their foreheads stay touching, and can't keep the grin off his face as they both open their eyes back up. "Ancients, I have wanted to do that for so long," Danny giggles a little, before going back in for another. They lose track of time, even though it doesn't go much further than chaste, happy kisses and giggles. Tim lays back on the floor at some point, pulling Danny down with him as they continue to trade affirmations and fluttering presses of lips on skin and semi-delirious giggles. Danny doesn't stop purring the whole time. Danny pulls Tim through the door to their apartment gently, giggling the whole way. He still has on his graduation robes, ropes, and stoles, but his cap is nowhere to be found. He has a feeling the next time he sees it will be in a frame in the dining room at Wayne Manor. He doesn't really care at the moment, though. Right now, Tim is grinning at him with a mouth full of mischief and eyes alight with promise. Danny has a boyfriend of 7 years to celebrate his 2 shiny new degrees with. "Dr. Nightingale," Tim says, as he closes their door behind him and pulls Danny to his chest. "I can't believe I managed both the master's in aerospace engineering and the PhD in astrophysics." Danny giggles before pressing a kiss to Tim's forehead. "In 4 years." Tim pulls him down the couple of inches for a proper kiss before he says, "You did a regular degree in math, physics, and electrical engineering in 3. Danny laughs. "That was different. I got the math major as a side effect of the other 2. Tim shakes his head and gives him another kiss. "Fucking ridiculous," he mutters against Danny's lips. "Smartest dumbass I have ever met." "You're a dumbass, though," Danny replies softly, when Tim pulls back for air. "Damn right you are." Tim grins and pecks him one more time before pulling away and wiggling past a laughing Danny to dart into the kitchen. "Excuse you? Where the fuck do you think you're going? We have to be at the manor in 2 hours, and I distinctly remember you telling me you were going to help me out of my graduation duds," Danny yells after him, the laughter in his voice betraying his true feelings on Tim's stunt. "Only 2 hours," Tim echoes breathlessly as he pulls open the junk drawer Danny has been swearing he would clean out and organize for 2 years now, and sifts through it quickly. He knows Danny has a surprise planned for him for during dinner tonight, and he knows Alfred and Bruce are in on it. His siblings don't know anything about it, but joke's on Danny, he has his own surprise planned. Tim pulls a small silver box out of the bottom, back corner of the drawer, and slips it into his pocket before Danny enters the room, grin bright and freckles glowing. Danny's heart skips a beat as Tim spins to look at him, and he can't help the way his grin softens into a loving smile. He is still blown away sometimes by how happy Tim makes him. It doesn't matter how many times Danny has come home to him, how many times he falls asleep purring, he just can't quite wrap his head around the warmth that bubbles in his bones when he sees him smile. He hopes he never gets used to it. "You know as well as I do that 2 hours isn't near long enough to do much, love," Danny says. "Besides, we have to eat, I need a shower, and you have a phone call in an hour, and I have to portal out to get Ellie in time for her to ride with us to the manor." He walks around the island to pull Tim into his arms. "Yeah, yeah," Tim says, as he reaches up to hook his elbows over Danny's shoulders and rest their foreheads together. "I have a surprise for you. Want it before we eat, or should I wait until we get those sandwiches together?" Danny pulls back to look at him in surprise, then goes thoughtful, It depends, he says. Is this the kind of surprise that would work if we both showered? He waggles his eyebrows in the way they both know is supposed to be sexy, but is really just ridiculous. I mean, technically yes, but in reality that would only elongate the experience and inevitably make us late to everything. Tim laughs. Save the sex for when we get home tonight. Danny, honest to God, pouts before leaning in for one more kiss and then pulling away to open the fridge and start digging for the sandwich ingredients. It's up to you then, Starlight. Tim grins and turns to pull a couple of plates out of the cabinet as Danny throws toppings and condiments onto the counter. Between the two of them, the food is ready to go in 2 minutes. Tim makes Danny carry the dishes to the table while he puts everything away. He grabs a bag of potato chips, kettle-cooked and plain like Danny prefers, before heading to join him. So, Danny asks as Tim slides into his seat. Yes, Tim smirks before taking a bite of his sandwich. In all the years he's known Danny, the easiest way to wind him up is to play against his patience. Danny whines as he takes a bite of his own sandwich and then reaches to dump some of the chips on his plate. At least tell me what the surprise is. Tim loves him. I love you, Tim says sweetly. Danny just groans around a mouthful of a sandwich. Finish your lunch, Danny, he says. You can wait long enough to eat. Danny pouts, but continues to eat as the two fall into a companionable silence. It lasts until Danny swallows his last bite. All right, Tim, fess up. What do you got? Tim laughs as he stands and grabs Danny's empty plate and the half-eaten bag of chips. Danny follows him into the kitchen, whining the whole way. Tim sets their plates in the sink and the chips on the counter before finally turning and taking Danny's hands in his. I know you have something planned for dinner tonight with Alfred and Bruce, but I also know you have the worst ADHD and anxiety combination, so... Tim reaches into the pocket he slipped the box in earlier. This should eliminate some of the anxiety. Danny's eyes widen at the box, and Tim can feel the hope, happiness, excitement in his aura without trying. Danny's eyes flicker rapidly from the box to Tim's face and back again. His dropped jaw suddenly closes as his face morphs from surprise to the purest happiness Tim has ever seen. His freckles might as well be stars at this point with how bright they glow. Even his hair is getting into it, floating gently as though they were in a Ghibli film. He takes the box reverently. I know we talked about you being the one to propose, and that it was going to be a family thing, but I also know it has been almost a year since we last talked about getting married. I saw you texting Alfred to make sure everything would be ready earlier in the week, and recognized your what-if face showing up more and more. Once I had both pieces, it wasn't hard to guess, and if you already said yes to me... While Tim babbles, Danny opens the ring box and doesn't bother holding back the tears. Tim is right. It has been a while since they talked about getting married, and anxious does Tim know him well. He's been nervous all week, second-guessing and trying not to psych himself out. He looks back up at Tim, smiles soft and tears on his cheeks, waiting patiently for him to stop. Then you wouldn't have to worry. You could just have fun. Do what you planned. I know you were trying to surprise me, and I do appreciate it so much. I don't want to ruin that for you. You just have had so many things to stress over the last few weeks that I just wanted to surprise you too. He finally takes a breath as he brings his hands to cup Danny's face, wiping his tears with his thumbs. You had a question there, Polaris, Danny whispers. Marry me. Tim takes the box from him easily, slides the ring out, and takes Danny's left hand in his. Danny nods almost before Tim gets the words out and presses forward to kiss him as he slides the ring onto Danny's finger. The end.